Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die. Baby dear,
hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic with fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, I'm joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I am uncertain what civilian you may be referring to, but Vice Marshal Weirdington Esquire is reporting in.
Eventually you're going to run out of those and it's going to be like, it's going to get weird. Yeah. Hi, folks. We're back again. Episode, like, 50, I think. We're actually, like, officially episode 50 now. So that's cool. Gosh, is this the anniversary? I think it might. It's either this week or next week. It's, like, the actual anniversary of us doing this podcast for the first time. And that's fucking crazy to think about that we've been doing this for, like,
completely
a year.
Completely insane. Yeah. Yeah. Actually. Like, it's... And I love it. It really appeals to my, like, Kaufman-esque sensibilities of, like, ultra irony and humor. Like, this is the greatest, like, it fills me with a deep joy that we've made it this far and we've been doing this for a year. So that, like, you can look ye mighty! Look upon our works! We've done a 50-plus episode podcast over the course of a year about a fanfic of a fanfic.
It's kind of wild. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. This episode will prove to be pretty trying. So, but first and foremost, Weird, you should tell us what we learned last week.
Should I?
I mean. That is your job here.
All I remember is the very beginning and the very end. And you'll have to help me piece together what happened between these two events, because I also recall it was entirely disjointed, and, like, yeah, nothing had it, like, characteristic of the story, nothing had any, like, meaning to anything, like, nothing felt like it meant anything or would have any sort of consequence, even the beginning and end. And we open up with the team riding the rape mobile.
Yes.
A mobile powered by rape.
Yes.
Deus, the sociopathic rape monster with who is made of mostly gun, has long since been, like, corporeally killed, robo lobotomized, like his brain has been repurposed as the central computer of a tank, and now the party is just riding around on him.
Yes,
hey, ain't that cool? And then a series of things happen, ending in okay, so to pay off the debts for Blackjack's latest surgeries, they've had to do the Collegiate a favor to run up and destroy a device mind controlling hellhounds. Along the way, they find out that the hellhounds are being mind controlled specifically to fight a cyborg zebra army that we haven't heard about until exactly now.
Well, they were in the backstory. They were during one of Shuja's memories was about the Blood of Coyotl, which were what the name of these are, or Brood of Coyotl. Sorry.
Okay. So a thing that once existed before the bomb, but now it's here.
Yes.
Sure.
In cyber form.
So that we fight some of those, destroy the mind control beacon. The two Hoofdwaffen were combing them, and lo and behold, they betray them.
Shocker.
Sudden as it was inevitable. And then we end the chapter with BJ and crew being completely surrounded by a vast horde of cyber zebras, led by their Roman legate, who proceeds to style all over BJ.
Yes.
And then just let her go, in spite of all the setup that, like, she's supposed to be the devil, and, like, if this guy is sort of a Roman legate, like, underseeing a campaign of liberation, as the Romans would put it, underseeing a self-defense, a Roman-style self-defense project in the area, it is totally incomprehensible that he would do that. Yes. Also, one final note. Something I missed last podcast. I remember the very end because it stuck out to me that I got something wrong, or at least I didn't notice something. He let her go!
Yeah.
He let her go!
Yeah, I at this point, like, I just accept it as a thing that just happens. Like, the everyone just gets let go. No one ever kills anybody. Like, no one ever coup de grace people.
It's no wonder that, like, so many people stormed out of the story at this point. It's no wonder that so many people gave up completely on this shit. Because, so here's some wrestling terminology. It's a term we've used before, specifically referring to a famous example of this, the Montreal screw job. I should have looked this up ahead, but I'm tempted to, like, try and quickly Google it and see if I'm getting it right. So a screw job is basically when everything about the booking has led up to, like, a face's, like, final victory. For some arcane reason, management just decides not to, like, that everything should be in someone's favor. So the Montreal screwjob was the most famous screwjob because it was, like, a perfect storm of an example of a screwjob.
It's also when kayfabe was broken.
Like, Bret Hart was contractually promised, like, outside of the fiction of the show, that, like, this he would be able to get to retire on this. I think, like, that like this is, like, he was the crowd favorite in Montreal. Like, he was, like, the babyface, like this territory, like, is his place. The fans are coming out to see him win. But for arcane business reasons, or just sort of spite,
yeah. Short answer: Vince McMahon is a bastard.
without Bret Hart, our babyface in this case, even knowing, like, outside of the fiction, his opponent, under instructions from management, went stiff on him, and stiff means throwing actual punches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also known as a shoot.
A shoot can be even just, like, a shooting can also refer to, like, doing an interview that breaks kayfabe. Like,
yeah,
like a shoot is like,
but a shoot when you're wrestling means you're actually hitting them usually.
Yeah. Yeah, stiff.
Either or, but both are both
anyway,
are.
Anyway, so yeah, they. Caught him off guard, beat the shit out of him in the ring, and it was so ugly that, like, they couldn't maintain the fiction anymore. Like, the fiction of wrestling, like, to a certain degree, the suspension of disbelief was permanently damaged that night. It was, yes. It was such a fuck up.
And the term for the willing suspension of disbelief in wrestling is called kayfabe, just to explain that for people who don't.
This was the blackjack screwjob. like
it broke kayfabe.
Like, this motherfucker comes out of nowhere, rinses our baby face. Pretty shitty baby face. Like, I don't know. She's a Hulk Hogan. Like,
yeah, I know. I'm thinking about, and now I'm thinking about Blackjack doing a sharpshooter, and it's really funny to me.
Rinses the baby face, the local baby face, the protagonist of the story, and then just walks away. Like, that, like, title didn't even change hands. nothing happened except for the legitimacy of our protagonist's, like, strength was buried. Like,
yeah, to me it comes across a lot like when you're setting up for a pay-per-view event and, like, two guys are supposed to be rumbling and one guy's got the belt, and like, the guy will, like, beat him up with a chair, and everyone's like, my God, he's being beaten up with a chair! Well, he's gonna be mad for SummerSlam! And, like, I think it's trying to set up that, like, their actual proper bout is gonna be, like, a big deal. But it's important to remember, this isn't fucking wrestling. Like, this is a story that's supposed to have, like, stakes and isn't a soap opera. So it's fucking ridiculous that he's just basically like, I'm gonna beat you again at SummerSlam and take your belt.
But no, that's the most infuriating thing. There's not even a belt on the line. It was barely even it wasn't even an exhibition match. There's no belt on the line. If, like, the belt is in fact her.
It's
like,
the belt is destiny, because she's fated to be defeated by him or something. Oh man, we are getting really deep in the wrestling weeds this episode.
But I mean, it's in our effort. It's where we're Lovecraft protagonists observing the unobservable and attempting to, like, explain its contours.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's the recap. A little extra long this week because I really need to emphasize I didn't notice that they let him go. Like, at the end of the episode, I was tired and went, okay, like, I was, in my head, I was just like, okay, we'll open up next chapter with them in captivity, and we have a whole zebra arc. But no! Nothing!
Yeah. I also, somebody that, who's also read this story brought this up to me, so I also have to, like, retract and make an apology. I misread an entire scene, and it changes a lot of some of the shit we ranted about last week.
Oh shit! Right, Blackjack shoots a guy,
but it then turns out that Lacuna shoots him instead. That, like, Lacuna, like, pulled, like, basically, like, made her do it, like, pulled the trigger, and then basically, like, cops to it. So that changes a lot of the scene. It doesn't change my feelings about Blackjack though, because, like, I went on a long rant about the whole concept of, like, voiding the one element of character that Somberg considers to be sacred, of her not being an executioner. She does eventually abandon that. I thought it was just this at this point. Like, there is a point in which she basically just goes, like, nah, I'm just, like, whatever, I'm just a monster. And that whole...
And you can be forgiven for misreading it, because, like, throughout the text, like, she takes full culpability for it as though it were her.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone blames her for it as though it were her, even though they all know that it wasn't. Like, this is more dead babies than ever. Like,
yes.
this is 1,000%. Like, if anything, I'm reassured by this knowledge. Oh, it's even stupider. Okay, well, that's so stupid that it's within the scope of my expectations.
the acceptable parameters of stupidity that normally expected by the series. But yeah, but I made a mistake. I misread something, and it led me down making an assumption, but, like, I still think that the point I made about Blackjack's character is still on point. It's just that, like, the literal text says Lacuna shot for her. Like, Lacuna shot first and then took the, like, blame for it. Which also just makes, like, Lacuna lamer to me. Like, it makes the, like, Lacuna's character sucks because she's Somme and Somme sucks.
Yeah, her theocratic fascist murderer side is really coming out, is coming to the fore. But then again, this dude was, like, it was raping Jim. Like,
yeah.
I can't mourn too much over rapey Jim.
Yeah. Loves to rape, that dude.
Spare a moment of silence for the 6 month running wasteland champion rapist.
Jesus Christ. Oh, man. Oh, that's dark. Alright, let's get into chapter 55, which I'm gonna fucking hate and yell a lot, because the end of the last chapter was them deciding, okay, we need a boat to get into the sky. For some reason, they know that society has one, so now we get to deal with the society. Yay! Tying up
man,
that
been,
loose
been
faction.
Waiting for details on these guys. Been...
Oh, man. I don't know who's going to be madder in this chapter. It's going to be a real challenge So chapter 55, Noblesse Oblige, or Noblesse Oblige, yeah. Depending on your translator. You know, as I often do, I usually subtitle these with this, with fun things to describe the chapter as. This one was just, man, fuck this chapter. So that's the tone going in. We get an in media res conversation where Blackjack is being caught up on a bunch of, like, basically we're given a bunch of lore reasons for why they can't just go up into the sky with, like, a regular flying vehicle or a vertibuck. It's because all of the cloud cities all have uber defensive Tesla coil systems that automatically detect any single vehicle that can fly that flies under, like, magical power and will be immediately struck down. So there's no way they can fly up anything that doesn't work on its own power. It can't be magic powered. And also they have tons of cameras on them, so you can't just, like, go up there with a non-thing. We're going to have to do it in a special way. And also Lacuna can't teleport us all up there because Lacuna's teleportation stuff isn't working very well anymore because the goddess is about to get exploded. Like, it goes out of its way to establish that, no, there's literally no way of
getting... Aha, Space Ghost! You are, incapable of withstanding the assault of my legions of invisible cavemen!
Aha, well, Dementor, little do you know, I redirected your time stream to send the invisible cavemen to France and make them visible in the 1600s, where they will be mocked for their crude matter and ill state of dress!
Yeah, it goes really out of its way to establish that literally the only way to get up into the sky is through this specific method. So they have to deal with the society.
You can't get through my invincibility force field. Well, I've got an invincibility force field breaking pick. Oh, no. Well, yeah, but then you have to get through the pick proof field underneath that.
The pick proof field. But yeah, Lacuna talks about the main plot for a while. About how, like, the goddess is dealing with little Pip now, and they have the black book, and shit's about to go down. And also, like, the goddess has just, like, gone into, like, full villain, like ridiculous Disney villain mode, where she just does things to, like, hurt Blackjack, like, torture Lacuna with her mind. And there's a weird line in this where, like, they talk about the idea that, like, oh, the goddess has been, like, sending more doubts into Lacuna more than ever, but, like, Lacuna remains the same. Like, Lacuna doesn't, like, this is another one of those things where, like, the mechanics of how it works isn't very well realized or extrapolated, because, like, it's, like Lacuna is, like, established as, like, she's kind of become her own person through the power of, like, being able to suss out her, like, identity through this miasma of feelings, but, like, adding more to that pot would, like, sort of destabilize that in theory. So she would be, like, more mechanical and wooden now than she ever has been, but she, because, like, that goes against character development, and it would be, like, really pointless to do and really hard to, like, write, and Sombra's a hack, that doesn't happen. But whatever, the goddess is torturing Blackjack through Lacuna and mocking her and, like, maniacally laughing, which is ridiculous. But yeah, they're on their way. They're taking the Rape Train Express to society's hometown. They come up to a, I think it's a country club and golf course, because of course it is, called Elysium Gardens, or just Elysium, because, you know, of course it's called Elysium. Elysium? Is it Elysium or Elysium? I don't know.
I think it's, I've only ever heard it pronounced Elysium.
Okay, Elysium. They get accosted by some guards who are, like, you know, they radio in, like, oh, that's, it's security and her friends, they're going to kill us all, they're coming to kill us. And it's the Reapers are attacking, and then I don't want to fucking do this chapter. The guy we had met like literally books ago at this point, Prince Splendid, who was from the society. He was really early on. He was having that conflict with the Collegiate about getting the, like, technology from the Fluttershy Medical Facility. Really early in stuff. So it's forgivable you don't remember who this douche is. But he shows up, and both of his sisters also show up, and they're like, okay, you need to stand down, because if security wanted in, she would just kill us all. So we need a parley.
Hold on. Something I might have missed. Brain fuzzed up. Is the golf course dead? Like, is it like? Do we get to see an apocalyptic vista of like a once?
The golf course has been converted into like farmable land. It's where the serfs, which we'll get into in a second, but it's where the serfs live. It's also remember that they have. It's important to remember they also have a border wall of barbed wire fences. But they show up and they're like, okay, you need to let him in because we couldn't stop them if they tried. And BJ's like, we just want to talk. We need something from King Awesome. And they're like, okay, that sounds fine, but you have to relinquish your weapons and your tank has to stay here. And they all agree to that. We get the introduction of two characters I could not give less shits about, but they're really important to the story, so I have to talk about them. We're introduced to Splendid's two younger sisters, Princess Grace, who is like a really hottie totty princess who wears like fancy dresses and wears like a crown, and she can teleport. She has teleportation magic, which is supposed to be very rare and difficult, so it's a big deal. And there's also Princess Charm, who's like a bratty sociopath who like doesn't consider like the serfs, which are their slaves, to be human or pony, but whatever. It's subspecies, so they can. So she doesn't consider them to be
unpersons.
Like, yeah, unpersons. They're just the help. And I only bring her up because she's awful and she's critical to a bunch of shit later. But yeah, they're all stuck up and snooty and royal, and you're supposed to like kind of hate them, obviously. But yeah, they're forced to disarm. But this is going to be a weird chapter to try and explain because there's a lot of stuff coming up. They're forced to disarm and they go into the building. So flash cut to the next scene where they're getting a nice tour of the place. And this is where it all starts to go south real fast, because they all know the serfs are slaves, and they're being press ganged into being here. And like 21 of all motherfuckers is the voice of reason during this entire thing, because Sombra actually remembers that like 21 was a slave for most of his child and adult life up to this
point. And he resented every moment of it.
Yes. So he's like, because they talk about, like, oh yeah, here's our serfs, and he, like, you know, talks about, like, okay, well, why are the conditions worse? Like, why, like, you have slaves, and he's like, it's, you know, everything looks nice here, but it's built on the backs of slaves, and Splendid's like, actually, they're not slaves, they're technically serfs, there's a difference, and he's like, I don't really see much of a difference. Well, we house them and feed them, unlike real slaves, so I think it technically counts.
That's not the difference between a slave and a serf.
No, it's not.
Those are the basic maintenance demands of a slave.
This is where we already get into step one of where the story gets really dumb. Somber doesn't seem to understand that slaves don't just exist. Like when a slaving faction takes a bunch of slaves in, they don't just like put them in a pen and then don't feed them or house them, because that's how you get dead slaves. Like, you have to maintain them. But the argument being made here is that, well, we don't press gang people in, we don't strap bomb collars to their necks, because that's the thing that Fallout does, is put bomb collars on slaves, even though that makes no sense when you actually think about it. But then they point out that, like, Blackjack literally caught a bunch of society goons, like, holding somebody at gunpoint to sign the contract, and they still are like, well, you know, when you look at it, it's like, what would you rather have, death in the wasteland or be working for us? And it's like, well, you didn't really give them a choice either way. Like, you just held them at gunpoint and forced them in. Like, this isn't the way this is. But here's where this...
Silver or lead, hombre. But by silver, I mean more lead.
But this is where it gets very, very frustrating. So BJ takes a look around and they argue more about, like, the difference between serfdom and slavedom. And, like, you know, like, they 21, like, pulls her in, and it's like, so when are we killing all these fucks? And she's like, what? He's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, they're all slavers. Like, why don't we just kill them all? And she's like, I don't know. That seems kind of radical to do.
But you don't understand, 21, these people are in power. Like, they have titles and everything.
she's like,
I couldn't kill our own degenerate, insane mare until she got jobberitis.
Yeah. Well, they even use that as an argument of like, well, I don't want to turn this into another 99, and like kind of ignoring the fact that 99 was already a hole. Like, it was already like a fucking nightmare before it turned into Rapeopolis, like before it turned into like a hungry pit of zombies. But yeah, they keep and she's like, well, you know, they're not technically slaves. They say they're not. They say they're just serfs. And like 21 correctly identifies that you could call them workers, serfs, bosom buddies. I don't give a shit. Like, it's the semantics don't matter. And like, I hate this chapter for making me agree with 21.
For the kids listening at home, the major distinction between a slave and a serf is that a slave belongs to a master, but the serf belongs to the land. Now, the land happens to also belong to a master, but you can't just sell a serf. That's a person, and he's capable of owning property on your land. No, no, no. But, however, if you did sell the land that he's forced to occupy at sword point, you have also sold them. They're not a slave. They're more like buildings or farm equipment.
But yeah, he points out that, like, you know, there's a very clear class dichotomy where it's like, well, you don't work with them, you slave over them. Like, you don't, like, they're not your workers, they're your people you own. And like, I was like very confused about like there's also a really confusing line in this where basically like when 21 like pushes the issue, she's like, there's 8 of us, what could we do? And it's like, Blackjack, you're a giant unkillable cyborg zombie. You're one of your best friends is an unkillable phoenix, like phoenix talisman bound super monster, and you have a tank on your side now. What are you talking about?
Also an angel, like a you have an alicorn, which is like one of the like most powerful things in the setting.
Yes.
An exceptionally powerful one too. One who is built on the frame of a murderer, who is mutated out of the body of a professional killer. They're so terrified of you that they let you in specifically hoping that you would not murder. Like, if they're hoping to placate you at this exact moment. Oh, that reminds me. I really want, like, this is a bad time to put it in. Really wish I'd put it ahead. Anyway. Another thing that pisses me off about the Legate, because I'm about to bring up the Legate in a meaningful way to the current context. I misunderstood something.
Okay.
I didn't realize that he was yet another regenerating immortal. Like, yet another, like, Wolverine healing factor asshole.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that I suspect, even if they aren't conscious of it, really hurt to read for the longtime audience. I thought, based on his themes and based on the fact that apparently, like, him catching a tank shell out of the air was edited out of the most recent draft of that fight, that his thing was, like, supreme magical self-sovereignty, that he was just totally juggernaut, implacable, indestructible, mm-hmm.
But
rather than yet another regenerator.
No, he literally has the same powers as Rampage. Like, as far as I can tell, he just made his own version of the Phoenix Talisman, like, I guess, at a garbage because he was bored, like, because it's just something he can do.
Without having to, like, cohabitate with 8 other souls.
Yeah, because he's just better. Because
he's just so cool. Anyway.
Yeah, I was... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was about to transition back to the main plot. That said, the only reason I can think that... never mind. I was about to say the only reason I can think that she would have, like, her sort of spirit, like, she would be... She would not be confident in her ability to waste these fools is that she was just stomped by a rando out of nowhere. And so, like her confidence might be broken. But this is a repeat of the shit that happened back at the Hooftwaffen base, where she handed over her katana and all of her, like, precious babies, like her named weapons. Like, she gave up all that shit because she didn't have the confidence to just leverage all of their lives over them. Like, okay, I can walk out of here quietly if you give my stuff back.
Yeah.
She didn't do that. So this is just a continuation of weird cowardice.
Yeah, her loseritis. But yeah, there was a couple of lines I wanted to read out of this particular episode, because a lot of the like argumentation being made is so infuriating and stupid. When pressed by 21 to why they're not just immediately fixing this problem, she responds with, "I just heard at the door with a hoof. I already have half the hoof against me, P21, which is weird that she calls him by his full name. And any day the goddess might take over me for good. I'd like to not add another group after my head. You're assuming everything is bad is bad just from where they live. From all you know, they're happy to be here. They may even be grateful." Which, like, God, I fucking hate this writer. Like, I hate... Like, this is...
Gotta have high hopes for a living.
This is fucking... post... It's post-Confederacy, like, slave propaganda. Like, being perpetuated by this fucking story. Like, it's... Well, you know, the blacks should be grateful that we uplifted them. We taught them how to read and write. We gave them food. Like, they should be grateful for all the work that they get to do. It's oh man.
Now you see, the problem with you leftists is that you see a fat man standing next to a skinny man, and you assume that it must be that way because the fat man is taking all his food. Well, you don't know what's actually going on there.
I hate it. Whatever. Fucking leftist 21 over here. Civil rights 21 can go do his thing. BJ's like, okay, if you have doubts, you sneak around, see what you can find out, so we can get like a good read on these people in case like they are actually evil, which like only in the brain of Somber could being actively slaving people and be like, maybe they're not all that bad. But anyways, BJ goes and fucks off to...
Oh shit, no, I do have to mention this. So this is an anecdote from my actual life, that a quote from an actual human being that I know in the flesh comes to mind. I was talking to him recently and pointing out that a major political figure is probably not trustworthy because he worked for a corporation that is an evil factory, like it's a consulting firm that if you look up anything about this company's history, all of their consultations are to do evil. are like they are 100% evil. It is an evil factory. It is an atrocity mill. And his response to me was, "Look, I know all kinds of people who work for corporations, and like, not everyone is accountable for the actions of their employer. Like, look, there are plenty of people who work for Walmart and all kinds of businesses, and they aren't directly involved. Like, you can't land a moral judgment on them for some shady stuff that their company does."
Is the noise I'm making.
So yeah, anyway, 21 conducts his investigation while the rest of the plot
happens,
moves on.
I guess. So BJ goes and fucks off to King Awesome's study, which is a sentence I fucking despise. She like reads a like terminal about golden blood that I just don't care about. Like, it could be important, I just had completely glazed over at this point with this golden blood shit. Because it turns out that, like, King Awesome is, like, obsessed with the old world, because of course he is, because he styled his entire faction off of, like, deeply traditionalist, like, fascist garbage. So, it's shocker. But he's, like, really into the OIA for plot contrivance reasons.
You know that world that, resulted in, radioactive hellfire, bleaching everything? Man, let's go back to that.
Yeah.
Those were good times.
Those were good times. But yeah, it's important to remember King Awesome is a fucking ridiculously stupid character. Like, so King Awesome was the fucking absolute man-baby who got kicked out of the Companions, the, like, previous faction of that the previous faction of heroes, hero friends, even though they weren't really heroes and weren't really friends, who tried to tame the Wastes and tried to tame Hoofington and all got broken and they all became their own faction leaders and whatever, got kicked out of them because he got friend-zoned by Dawn, and then he went nuts and tried to kill her, basically, or like rape her. I can't remember one of the two.
It was a misunderstanding. So someone had tricked him.
Someone had tricked him, but he lost it, and that's what broke the friendship between all of them. And they've all been estranged for years because of that. Because Dawn decided to leave and got whisked away into the sky. There's about to be a lot of King Awesome being treated like he's a really cool, charming dude. And I would like to just remind us all that he is like the neckbeardiest loser in the world. And this is basically his room full of body pillows and anime figures.
And Greek busts, based on what you've said so far. Like he's a real Greek bust avatar, kind of.
Yeah, he's a real Stefan Molyneux kind of flavored chud.
The real problem is women.
Yeah.
Choosing bad mates.
It's not even that far off. She hangs out with King Awesome for a while, and he's really cool and charming, which is fucking ridiculous. It spends a lot of time talking about how this dude is like a cool older dad to her, basically. And she laments the fact that she doesn't have her own father, which is she killed her own father. Like that's where that gets extra weird. She had to summary execute her own father, which is like part of the like initiation, essentially, of being part of the like police force, as far as I could tell. So her mythologizing and romanticizing the idea of a father is like very like it just doesn't fit within her like matriarchal mindset. But they talk about like the fact that like this place is pretty bad, and he's like, ah, oh, bad. You should have seen it before I got here. This place was way worse. As if that like counterbalances it, like that because they used to just be a bunch of violent raiders, which we'll get to that in a second. They were a bunch of violent raiders that would just slay people and kill it with impunity. Because they lived in a golf course that was part of the old world, they had a slight aristocracy bent to them, and that was it. Then King Awesome came in and taught them the real aristocracy, which apparently was like, you don't kill your slaves, you just enslave your slaves. But it's important to remember that raiders
take the food and you put it, you open your mouth and then you put it in the mouth and then you close it and then like do that a bunch until it's ground up. Then you swallow it. Oh, this is good medicine. This is profit.
God, I don't remember where this conversation is placed, but there's a quote.
Oh,
that,
God, this is pure technocracy. He disrupted slavery.
Yes, just disrupted. Oh, I hate it. I don't like it.
This is the technocratic dream. No, like we just have to do it right. We just have to like the grueling nightmare of inequity. That's not the problem. It's that it's inefficient is what's causing the problems.
This quote is particularly frustrating. One of my friends and I came to the Hoof. We found dozens of different tribes of raiders, various kinds of scum who'd carved out their own little niches. Kill one band and another would pop up. With the exception of Meat Locker, there weren't real settlements. But then we encountered the ponies living here in the Elysian Gardens. I knew that they could be more, because they wanted to be more. They pretended and imagined that they were descended from blue-blooded aristocracy. Doubtful a hoopful were, but most of them, were no different stock than raiders. He later goes to talk on that. I need to get through this. He later goes to talk on that what he introduced to them was ethics. That is what he taught them. He taught them ethics, and that was what. That was what changed them into becoming the society they are now. There's a later tweet, because I'm just pulling tweets from a conversation I was having before, but, like, One of the lines he honestly, unironically bleats is, it's something along the lines of, "Evil is when we rationalize the wrongs we do to others." The slave owner said this. This also brings up a trend that had been previously established with a bunch of other conversations where villains get to say their speeches and then the hero internalizes them as if they were actually onto something, like if they were actually correct. Like, this happens with Sanguine, this happens with Dawn, this happened with fucking Daisy when she was going crazy. Like,
I wish I could point you to a specific episode number, but yeah, I remember this. I remember this conversation. I remember this trend. We're back here again.
Yeah, where
just a lot of past two episodes coming back home, coming back to old territory, old Somber's old reflexes.
Yep.
The villain Sue. Are we the baddies syndrome? Wherein, like, on some level, Somber is aware, like, his ideas and his ideals, like his morality is utterly fucked, and no one could possibly be convinced by this. So it had, like, the only person who can, like, express his worldview is the villain, are the baddies.
Yeah, like, basically the argument that keeps...
I was blown away by that, actually, like...
That he taught them evil ethics.
No, evil is when we justify our cruelties, or when we justify our bad actions, says the slave owner.
Yes.
who insists it's not pedophilia, it's endophilia.
Phoebophilia.
They're not slaves, they're serfs. Not even serfs. Serfs can own can own personal property. And are technically able to, like, buy their way out of serfdom, though it takes an astounding amount of money, because first you have to, like, buy your way off the land. And then you also have to have enough wealth saved up to, like, survive without any land. But again, we come around to, it's not even serfdom.
It never was. It's just a handy tool to describe, like, things.
So we got distracted from, like, the bad guy. It turns out is expressing Somber's actual opinions. I think it bears a brief noting, in case you aren't familiar the Roman civilization of the world around them, the Romans did this neat trick where they would sell their population on the, like, total lack of all sustainable or traceable civilization in their newest neighbor, the neighbors to their latest acquisition. Their total lack of civilization, and they need to be brought into the light of the Roman Empire and our way of doing things. And so they would go to this territory, and they would set up signposts converting existing roads into roads that henceforth the Romans built. they would gather up all the mine workers and for the first time create a mine that already existed.
Anyways, we kind of got a mosey. There's a fucking long chapter, but a lot of it's, like, truncated for the sake of this podcast. So yeah, she converses with King Awesome, and King Awesome is like, so you come here to free the slaves, basically. And she's like, no, why would I do that? It was like a baffling moment for me. It's like, why would I do that? I have no interest in any other character besides myself, is basically what Blackjack is admitting. Like, it's like, I'm just here for the gas. Like, I'm just here for the blimp. And King Awesome is like, oh, there is a kind of a funny moment.
I was kind of, you know what? Some part of me hoped that I could walk away from all of this.
Like, there was kind of a, well, it was, it wasn't even that. It was like, they were just like so expecting, like, oh yeah, our time has finally come up. Like, we're here comes the revolution. Here comes the men at our gates. Here comes the guillotine. I've been moisturizing my neck for this moment. And then it's like, oh no, actually I'm complicit with all of this because I'm a cop. See? Remember, I'm Blackjack the cop. I'm complicit.
If anything,
Call me if there's any sort of malcontents or rabble rousers. I'll come by.
If you need me to beat some zebras, I'm your girl. Till then, I don't give a shit. I'm whatever. Yeah, Blackjack the class traitor. But yeah, so King Awesome's like, yeah, we'll take it'll take a few days to get the blimp up and running. So to hear, like, feel free to just hang out and just like basically he's just like feel free to just hang out and let the plot grind to a halt again.
Care for a glass of gold shock.
I'm gonna go sleep in the corner because I'm an old man. We then smash cut to Glory's operating on one of the cyber zebras that they had like came across because she's trying to figure out how they work. This scene really highlighted to me to how irrelevant Glory has just utterly become now. Like they talk about the idea like, oh, okay, I'm gonna go deal with that other quest we need to deal with, and Glory's like, have fun doing that. I'm gonna sit here do nothing for the story ever again, because she doesn't like all her guns got stolen when she got kidnapped and they broke her guns. So she doesn't have any of her laser weapons, and, like, it's very clear that Sombra is just super done with this character. Like, something I'd found out relatively recently, it might have been before, but, like, I've talked about this before, but, like, Glory was never meant to, like, stay in the story. She was supposed to die and be replaced with her sister, like, in book one, which is why, like, Dusk shows up for no reason in the final battle of the first book. Is because Glory was meant to die and they just replaced her with a different character. But people, like, liked Glory. Sombra begrudgingly kept her in, apparently. And that's why she's had no impact on the story afterwards. That's why she became Rainbow Dash, is because, like, you can do whatever to this character because nothing about what she does matters. But she's just completely checked out at this point. She's just, like, she is now, like, her own NPC. She's faded into the background so completely. Has some revelation about the goddess that the goddess is talking to her about something, and like BJ like tries to like tell her friends that something's wrong, but because the goddess has enough like strings in her brain now, anytime she tries to say anything about the goddess, her brain just like stalls out, and there's like a deliberate moment where she always like tries to say something and it just like doesn't, it just gets cut out from the conversation, and instead the goddess like distracts her by just like by levitating up a convenient memory orb and doinking her in the head with it, with her own magic. Because again, Sombra never knows how to end scenes, or transition the story. So it's like, okay, memory orb time. Fucking shut up, story. I hate this. Memory orb isn't terrible.
I'm kind of blown away. Yeah. Like, it's not quite. And then she's struck by lightning.
Yes, but, like, nothing will ever beat her being struck by lightning. But
I doubt it's this. It's done this way in the story. But I'm kind of imagining like the it being perfectly comedically paced of like a long moment of silence. Look to the side, look back at BJ. Dunk,
dunk. It makes the little like glass clinking noise. BJ has a whole memory scene about seeing that like the computer systems are being upgraded in the local area. The only important part about this is that the there's a thing called a Crusader mainframe, which is a computer marvel so powerful you can upload your brain into it, and they're upgrading a new one where you can put multiple people in the same brain space, and like House is responsible for it. It's just setting up for later things. It doesn't matter right now. So back out of the memory orb. The story doesn't even like try to pretend to make sense of how, like, who these memory orbs are coming from either anymore. Like, it's an omnipresent camera now, instead of being like memories that have been extracted from people for a seditious material.
I miss that period where he gave up on like orbs and
same. I was having a conversation. Like
she was connected to the orb force directly.
So like, she was just seeing the orbs just by being around. I was having a conversation with somebody who's recently, like, friend of the podcast, who's been recently, like, reading through PH, and talking about, like, how they, like, didn't understand why I hated memory orbs so much, because they had read the original story, and they're fine in the original story, but PH bombards you with them. Like FOE uses them fairly sparingly to try and convey information that would be very hard to not just be exposition to the protagonist. But here it's an onslaught of memories. This every chapter is like a third memory orb at this point.
Yeah, it feels like that at least. Like that we get minimum an orb a chapter.
It's either an orb or it's an illusory dreamscape, or it's Somme's memories, or it's hallucinations of Golden Blood for some reason. Which I would all tie those as being the same thing, because they all serve the same purpose. And same with Terminals. Like it's all expository dialogue that doesn't really it's very distracting and very hard to read through. But then Blackjack wakes up to the fact that apparently the goddess has been joyriding in BJ's body while she was unconscious, because she's just been there's immediately a very funny description, because they're going to a place that has a lot of automated defenses, because they're going to a plantation farm from the past, and there apparently there's a description of there's turrets in there, and then sentries. So what the goddess has been doing with BJ's body has been running in, getting shot at a bunch, and then running back out to heal her back up with the cyborg regeneration, and then running back in over and over again. And it just feels like when you're really bored and you just have like you're playing a video game and you're just kind of bored with it, like The Sims.
He's playing The Sims, yeah.
It's like, all right, whatever. You're in the pool now, and all the
that was about to get real insidious. That was about to get real spooky. But nope.
Well, because the goddess is from the original story, and BJ can't do anything that would tamper with the original story. So this goddess stuff doesn't matter. I cannot properly explain how much this goddess stuff cannot matter unless Somber just goes, no, I'm rewriting my own story. So everything the goddess does is utterly toothless to me.
Oh, by the way, because I didn't want to interrupt you, because I was actually on pins and needles to find out what the goddess was doing with her body until you told me
that she's playing The Sims.
Which has been a recurring thing that, Fly has been kind of rightly, frustrated that one of my main responses to the story is to be disappointed by what didn't happen. My mind races, oh, this is going to be such a cool payoff. It could go this way or that way, or, this is, a cornucopia of wonderful potential. Oh, it shat itself instead.
And then died.
But anyway, the joke I was about to make was... I was about to say the goddess picks up and ragdolls, takes control of BJ's body while she's busy orb vibing, and goes, oh god! What is this? Oh no! It's the a demon is possessed by body meme, and oh, why does it hurt there? Too late now, sucker. I want out. Too late now.
Yeah, that got ripped off with BJ's body. Why is everything pain?
What have you been doing to it?
Why do I feel guilty, but also feel guiltless at the same time? But yeah. As per usual with these kind of things, basically BJ just goes on her own and really reinforces the fact that none of the characters matter besides Blackjack. She goes into this plantation area, fights a bunch of robots for a while, which no one cares about, especially me. But then Dawn shows up because apparently she's been trailing BJ and looking for a moment to strike, which, I mean... when the Legate was beating her ass and left her for dead, I feel like that was probably a better opportunity to strike with the killing snap. But, whatever. This scene is deeply frustrating. So in an inverse of how bad the booking is to Leggett, this is the most John Cena always wins moments I've seen in a while. Because like Dawn shows up, it's like, okay, it's round two, it's for serious this time. I'm a crazy Necron robot, and you're Blackjack, you're super powerful, and we're gonna rumble in this like weird plantation swamp thing, because it's like a hydroponics bay or whatever that's all flooded.
All right.
And
endanger the lives of everyone, literally everyone in the Hoof, because this place is the breadbasket.
Oh no, this isn't the Elysian Fields plantations. This was like a underground area that was near it that they're trying to salvage materials from for the Collegiate. Okay. So yeah, all this right. is this oh, is th- okay. there's no stakes.
All right,
no stakes.
Okay.
Bold of you to assume there were any stakes.
That is my bad.
You expected anything. But yeah, Dawn gets absolutely pantsed in this fight. Like, you know, she makes a big show of it. She, like, you know, wings extended with, like, irradiated green energy. And, like, when her maw opens up and it's all, like, a weird glowing nightmare inside of her body. To really prove just she's, like, completely mechanized. And then just BJ just, like, clowns her with a bunch of guns. Like, it's a little bit more, it's a little bit more of a give and take than that. But there are instances that really showcase that Blackjack should never lose a fight ever again. Like, there's literally a part in which she, like, she's telekinetically holding three guns. And she just, like, puts them next to Don's face and shoots them all in her head. And it's like, well, like, what? Like, how does this character lose at anything if she's, like, some sort of weird murder virtuoso? Like, but she clowns on Dawn for a while, and Dawn is, like, broken and battered and beaten. And BJ has the opportunity to deal the killing blow. And
all right, folks, last week at the Sunday Slam, you were introduced to the Undertaker. The man who death forgot. Back from the dead, an indestructible monster of devastation. Who completely wiped out several members of our stable. Now this week, he goes down like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
He's completely clowned on.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. Like it's a really goofy thing to do to what was really established as a really significant threat. Like it's not even really much of an even trade at all, and she just clowns her. Which again also like does that thing that I really hate about the story. Like the story has a lot of like internalized problems where like she has Dawn on the ropes and she's about to deal the killing blow and she like can't do it because this story like eliminates any good writing that it had by like Blackjack like literally talking about how like oh we're both the same we came from similar circumstances and we had similar paths and we both became monsters to try and help people. You and I are just dark mirrors of each other. And I was just like, you know, this was kind of like, this was cool when like the writing was good and you trusted your audience to actually like pick up on the subtle theming or not so subtle, but like at least somewhat subtle theming that you were making with Dawn, but just like out and out, just bleeding it out that like, it's like when people always, like, you know, applaud BJ for doing anything. It's like, you really were the best of us, Blackjack. You really are the dark shadow of my soul. It's just terrible writing. It's not... Like something I find time and time again that I'm frustrated by the story is that, like, just fucking trust your audience to pick up on what you're talking about. Like, don't hold them by the hand. Like, one of the worst mistakes you can make with writing is, like, assuming that no one is going to pick up on the things you're doing with your writing. As little as there is in this story, it's utterly annihilated because Somber can't seem to trust his own audience to actually pick up on the themes that he's dropping down. But anyways, she spares her, of course, because this isn't the final rumble between these two, but establishes that, like, Dawn is another paper tiger and I can't take her seriously ever again. Like, Blackjack had, like, was, you know, a couple of feet thick in mud with shit guns, and she was ambushed, and Dawn still got clowned by her. So, like, Dawn isn't a threat. She's just a joke. And that sucks because, like, she had a really good build-up up until this point. But she's another villain that, like, Sombra just fucked up.
It's mind-blowing. Like, it is literally, it is completely, I don't know how to handle this piece of information. Like, outside of the, like, really shitty, sort of, better things aren't possible, pandering to slavery and authoritarianism. That should be the thing I'm most angry about, but I'm actually most angry about this. I don't know how a human brain does this. I don't know how somebody surrounded by a bunch of like fucking editors like can do this. Like I think it's
really simple. Sombra is trying to outwit his own audience, and he's trying to write every single villain to be subversive. Which is why, like, it's and unexpected, because that's what he thinks is good writing. So that's why Deus is secretly a good person, even though that's a good person with a lot of air quotes. That's why Sanguine is secretly a good person. That's why the Reapers are. That's why, like, it's why, like, every single villain is the way they are. Like I had a list, but I kind of like just bungled it. But it's why, like, every single villain is like proven to be like not actually that bad, is because Sombra seems to have an inexplicable need to try and, like, subvert expectations because he thinks that that's good writing. All the characters are just, like, toothless hackwits that can't actually, like, commit villainry. Like, they're too... Like, that's a weird thing about it. Like, they're too... It's like they're, like, too stupid to actually, like, commit evil. Like, Dawn is just a puppet. Sanguine is just a joke. Deus is just a joke. Like, they're not actually capable of doing any sort of real villainy because they're all too dumb.
To be fair, we do have a strong suspicion that, like, all her buildup was somebody else's work.
Yeah.
Like, somebody else wrote the, like, introduction to the rad supervillain. Who would be Dawn.
Yes.
You had an entire arc here, man. You had an entire, like, set piece that was, like, off in the distance. You had, like...
I forgot about Psycho Shy. Like, Psycho Shy is also another one. So just wanted to get that out there. But yeah, it absolutely bungled the arc for like the sake, like just kind of just for the sake of like I don't know. The only way I can understand the reason this happened is that people hated the Lega fight so much, and Sombra internalized that as the reason why people don't like it is because I showed Blackjack losing to a superior opponent, and so next time I have her fight a superior opponent, she'll beat him because that's cool, and like that's why Dawn gets beaten here. That's the only reason, like the only thing I can think of like why this happened was it was just direct reaction to people's like disgruntlement over the Legate and not getting like why the Legate sucks.
Speaking of Dark Mirrors, this is exactly the same. Like it's an equal and opposite kind of shitty booking. Like,
yes.
You got
well. That's why I described her as John Cena. Like it was a John Cena squash.
It actually reminds me of the last like WWE show that I've ever seen in my life was they had this like horror house match where it was like a pre-filmed match inside of a spooky house that they burned down at the end, and like they were setting up Bray Wyatt as like. This is your generation's supernatural monster heel. Like this is the new Undertaker for a new generation. They fucking just used it to like basically Cena Orton, like Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
Instead you're trying to build up this motherfucker as like your new indestructible monster heel, and you make him look so overwhelmingly pathetically weak. He's so weak that in a fight in an enchanted evil in an evil haunted house where he stumbles out of the match with Orton barely alive, and you have him like limp back into the arena to declare victory with his fucking dry ice smoke show and creepy music. Only to have the lights go up, and Orton is there, unharmed, and breaks Wyatt over his knee.
Yeah. It's not a satisfying conclusion, to say the least. This is also not the end of the chapter, by the way. Because it kind of sounds like we were powering down, but it definitely isn't. Anyways, they get back. This is where King Friendzone talks about ethics. I just inserted it earlier because it was relevant. Because they catch 21 snooping. 21 is caught because he was trying to stop one of the guards from molesting one of the serfs. Grace is like, well, they like this, like, you know, it's like, I wasn't gonna let that slide, and that's why they caught me. It's like, well, Grace kind of loses it. It's like, well, you had a friend spying us. It's like, yeah, why wouldn't I? Like, in a moment of like weird again, like, yeah, why wouldn't I? Like, you're all fucking evil. Like, but this still is stupid hand-wringing bullshit. Grace mumbles some bullshit about like, well, I think it's actually consensual. And 21 snaps at her correctly by saying, it's not consensual if they own every aspect of your life. if they feed you and clothe you and you're not allowed to escape, it's not consensual.
Holy shit. Like, that's...
Well, okay,
who wrote
so,
this? Like,
so
who's the ghostwriter here?
The reason, like, the reason why I'm bringing this all up is because I don't remember exactly, but I just want people to be braced for this. I think the reason why 21 is so right in this is because he has to learn a very important lesson that slavers have families too.
Holy shit!
And that he's kind of wrong.
Holy shit!
Well, I've talked about this before. Somber is like a mewling liberal centrist, so the radical solution of just killing all the slavers and letting all the slaves go is too much change too fast. They have to slowly wean the slavers off of their slaving practices.
And by that, of course, we mean we need to slowly wean you off of your having a problem with this.
Yes, 100%. They get back to Glory, and Glory is just a fucking monster. Like, this is the moment, this whole scene is like the moment I went like, man, you know, I used to like this character because she was like a plucky lesbian, that was kind of fashy and like an idiot about her own culture. And it always kind of seemed like she was going to eventually learn her ways were wrong, but no. Silly, stupid Fi, stupid, dumbass, idiot, moron Fi. I was giving this story too much faith. Because, you know, 21 storms in a huff, and he's like, you know, he's like, how can we let this happen? This is monstrous. This is barbaric. And Glory's like, well, I mean, like, because, like, he's like, you know, she's like, it doesn't, like, they don't seem that bad. They seem pretty civilized here. And 21's like, you mean civilized, like, letting your subordinates get raped by your superiors? And Glory's like, yeah, that happens all the time. And then they go to jail because it's a crime. And... like, I just fucking astrally projected in that moment in rage of, like, the mindset of, like, oh, yeah, well, it's illegal, so they go to jail over it.
It's illegal, so it doesn't happen. Like, it's...
And
it
she's
would
like...
be impossible for that to happen. They would go to jail.
Well, no,
but
no,
they're
no,
not
no.
going to jail. Well, then it clearly didn't happen.
Well, that's the thing. It's not really... that I don't think it's being really conveyed. It's that she's ultimately fine with it happening because that's just a thing that happens. But if it's bad, then they get arrested. And she also, like, tries to point out, it's like, well, not all of the slave owners are truly the aristocrat nobles. Some of them are the slaves themselves, slaving the other people. And that's, like, supposed to be a gotcha, like a I'm very smart, and yet you participate in some society-style moment. Not really, like Somber is this dumb, like he doesn't understand like the wages of sin that like that a capitalistic society provides like this, because it's like, well, it's fine, they don't call them slaves, they house them, they feed them, and like whatever. Glory is the fucking worst. I hate her. I want her to die now. Like I don't care if any single one of them gets hit like with death. Like I don't care. Like, I want them all to get crushed or exploded or die of horrible diseases. I want them to get, like, fucking heavy metal poisoning. Because, like, they're just fucking... it's just so barbaric to, like, look at things like this and act
it's
like
also,
it's correct.
It's kind of astonishing that, I don't know, it says something to the human condition that, like, a lot of people stopped reading this story and they felt what you're saying in their guts.
Yeah.
They felt it deep inside, but didn't have the language to even articulate it to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let this be a PSA. Be very fucking careful of anyone you see online who says that they love this story. like, keep a close goddamn eye on that person.
Yes. Because if they can get through all of this and still believe that, like, Rampage is a good person, not Rampage, Blackjack is a good person, and Glory is a good person, and all of this is fine and a good and good and correct.
This is a deep story, with meaningful messages, and coherent, interesting world building. Any of those things, red flags.
Yes.
Be aware, be alert. Don't let them out of your peripheral vision. Make sure you know where your wallet is.
Yes. They will probably stab you. We're getting close to the end. We get a really uncomfortable, awful scene that could only be written by a moron, a straight person, where 21 and Glory are arguing back and forth that, like, oh, my point is correct. No, my point is correct. And it's doing that, like, sitcom, oh, they actually like each other thing. And Blackjack's, like, grabs them by the heads and, like, oh, you knuckleheads. And tries to, like, laugh off the fact that, like, one of them is advocating for slavery and the other one is advocating for freedom. And it's not just ideas and opinions.
That's the most frustrating lib move of all time. That's a real favorite of mine. Like, ha ha, slavery, freedom, Coke, Pepsi, whatever.
Yeah, oh, like, all are equal in the marketplace of ideas.
Can't we just have a difference of opinion here?
Can't we just all agree to disagree? Like, that we have to be so serious all the time, guys? But yeah, and then the final scene of this whole thing is King Awesome has died, and we find out that because Blackjack was nice to him in his final moments, that for some reason he decided to crown her the next in line of the society, which seems out of place, but when you consider the fact that, like, Blackjack is kind of already one of these people, essentially. Like, she already kind of believes and, like, feels the way they do. It's perfect. But yeah, so she's now Queen Blackjack, leader of the society.
Charlie, I've decided that you are truly empty inside. And so I bequeath you my entire chocolate factory.
It's funny to consider the fact that because she is the direct descendant of Twilight Sparkle, who does inevitably become a princess her own self, Blackjack is now double royalty by this story. She is a double princess.
You are a real cop after all, Blackjack.
The cop was inside you all along. Oh, man. But yeah, that's the end of our chapter, and we're going to have to deal with the concept of Blackjack being the fucking queen of the society next chapter. So that's cool.
I'm sure there'll be consequences, and I'm sure there'll be, like... I'm so sure. Like, I'm completely incapable of creating a predictive model in my mind, and I think that's a sign of recovery. Like, I'm not expecting anything. Because, like, I could imagine, in the hands of any other author, like, this would be a stunning and interesting turn of events with, like, long-term consequences and interesting fallout.
But they don't have time to deal with this. They have to go deal with the whole, yeah. Like... The Enclave is currently having a civil war happen, and there's the Legate, and there's Cognitum in the Core. Like, they don't have time to deal with this, so you know it literally has to just be a stupid one-off plot point that goes nowhere, that has no consequences over the future story, outside of the fact that Somber can claim, well, BJ's the queen of a place, and therefore she's royal, which is cool, I guess. She's Queen Whiskey, first of her name.
Yeah. I was expecting to be real, real mad, this cast, but I come away tired.
I read through this chapter.
Fairly empty inside.
I definitely read this chapter, and I definitely thought there was two ways this was going to go down. It was either going to be, like, a lot of us shouting. Like, admittedly, I did cut out a lot of, like, the actual nuance of what they're trying to do with this chapter, for the sake of brevity. And I will like to make the point that the entire point of this story boils down to they're not slaves because they're technically not the way that slaves are treated in this setting. Therefore, we can get away with having them, because it does make a point too. They are not allowed to leave. This whole building is covered in barbed wire because they can't. They don't want infiltrators to break in or out of the building to save the slaves. Like, because they have to protect their product, because that's part of slavery.
This is 1000% living in Texas all of my life. I can't tell you how many times people have said to explained directly to my face how the plantation system wasn't as bad as the liberals want me to think.
Yeah.
That like any successful plantation owner, any good slave owner. Of course there were exceptions. Of course there is the occasional rogue, but by and large, out of sheer practical necessity, the slaves had to be treated well.
Yes.
Had to be well maintained.
It's also important to remember that the modern American police force came out of slave patrols. So this is all mushes together into one perfect miasma. Like, of course, Blackjack, queen of cops, is also the queen of the slave owners.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Is there anything better we could be doing right now?
Fucking, I don't know, man. I'm pretty sauced at this point. I don't even think I've done anything in the last little while instead of, like, yeah, no, I've just been working on Paycomic, so.
I mean, I could think of something fun, but I have to admit that right now, all I can really think of is if you're in or near America, call up the campaign and see what you can do for Bernie.
Yeah.
This is important. This is a big deal. For the first time, perhaps in all of American history, we stand a chance. And don't fool yourself into thinking that like it's ever going to be done. Like, our goal is to force the DNC's hand and force them to destroy themselves on us. Like, we're going to force them to destroy every inch of their infrastructure and power, the way they destroyed Iowa. That's not very like this is like technically like I feel kind of bad because this is in many ways like a fun distraction, a media podcast. This is candy, and here I am presenting you with some rather tough vegetables.
Yeah, the bitter pill. I think it is critically important.
You have the strength, like, we need it.
Yeah. Despite myself being pretty anti-electoralism at this point and deeply anarcho, I still think that like you should still vote and get yourself organized, and if you can volunteer and help out, that I think you should for the Bernie campaign. Boy, this is
to me, voting is incidental. Like, I'm very much of the mind. It's a similar axiom to plans are useless on the battlefield, but the act of planning is invaluable.
Yeah.
What really matters is the organization. What really matters is this is a testing bed for being able to get organized, for getting to know people and building a network and becoming part of a network of people with a goal of making a better world.
So I guess
at the end of it, people vote. That's fine, but that's incidental to the work of getting people to vote.
So I suppose a recommendation for what you could be doing with your time better than reading this is voting for Bernie.
Is to revolt.
Yeah.
Tear down the walls, kill the kings.
But yeah, you can contact us at @MeAtThouArtFi on the Twitters. I am extremely not safe for work.
Highly not safe for work. I'm trying to put more fun, engaging content on my Twitter @WeirdingtonE @WeirdingtonEsquire. I have at least for the time being been at least partially shadow banned for getting real mad on Tuesday and spamming the fuck out of every liberal ghoul with lyrics to Solidarity Forever. But I mean, we'll see. But I'm trying to post more art and fun stuff aside from political philosophy musings and retweets of like just how desperate the democratic institution is. They're desperate, folks. They're afraid. It's afraid. You can email me and the podcast directly. WeirdingtonESQ @gmail.com.
Yeah, send us your questions, comments, and concerns. We will try to answer them to the best of our ability.
If you have the fortitude, if you have the courage, which I highly doubt, there's no way you could possibly email us at weirdingtonesq@gmail.com. But in the meantime, this podcast is really hard, Fi.
It really is. It's really hard to do.
And I think it might have all been a terrible mistake.
From home in the dark.